You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Cees Notenboom is a noted Dutch poet, essayist, travel writer, and novelist, and his latest book, Lost Paradise, combines all those aspects of his career. It follows two characters from different cultures whose paths cross twice, first in Australia, and then years later in Austria. It's published by Grove Press, and I'm very pleased that it has brought him back to the show today. It's a pleasure to see you again.
Well, thank you.
Your title is an obvious transposition of Paradise Lost. How much of an inspiration was Milton's epic poem?
Well, yes, it was, but I would have to explain what happened to me in Perth in Australia, because that's part of the inspiration for the book. During a literary festival there, at the same time there was running a theatrical festival with events. And one of the events was that in the city of Perth, which is a rather limited form, Perth is in the southwest corner of Australia, very far from the other cities, like 4,000 or 3,000 kilometers from Sydney and all that. In that rather small city, they had hidden angels all over. And the angels would be, let's say, white, black, young, old, in wheelchairs, anything you want.
By the way, this project was done in New York as well. This is
Deborah
Warner, and she was on the show to talk about the Angel Project when she did it here, I think, July 2003.
Yeah. And
but it worked better in Perth?
I don't know. I didn't see it here, but New York as a city is not manageable, I would think. Whereas Perth, they gave me... I did it myself. You had to go there... by yourself, all alone, not accompanied. You could say something to the angel, but the angels were supposed not to talk back. And anyway, during that walk through the city, they gave you addresses, and you would find or find not angels in cupboards, in corridors, on the floor, on ceilings and things, all that. But in one occasion, I came to a bank, and they let me into a room. There was nobody there. And the fax machine spouted Paradise Lost by Milton. And then I understood that they had made the connection with Paradise Lost, and the inspirational moment for the book was when I entered a dilapidated house, and on the third floor, there was nobody else in the house, I saw a young female angel with her back to the wall and with her face to the wall and her back with the wings towards me. But I never saw her face. My protagonist in the book, Eric Zondag, he goes there, and he's fascinated by this young female figure, and he desperately wants to see her face, and he wants to speak to her. And he stays far too long, and you have to understand the moment of strange intimacy when there are two people. She has heard him come up the stairs, and he's standing there, and you hear her breathe, but she's not allowed to speak. And he doesn't dare speak. And when he stays really too long, then she says, which he shouldn't have done, please go away.
Because it was getting too intimate.
Yes. And then he, of course, goes away. But then he wants to know when the festival really ends. Because at a certain point it will end, let's say at 5 o'clock on a given day. And he's standing there down at the stairs waiting to meet her. And then they meet. And she then is the girl of the first half of the book, a young Brazilian girl who on a tragic night has driven the car of her mother too far in one of those terrible slums they have in Brazil. This is in Sao Paulo. And that Brazil slum is with a perverse name called Paraisópolis, was like town of paradise. I mean, that all rhymed. This I did not invent. It was given to me. So there she is, and she's raped that night.
And she goes to Australia to kind of
recover with her friend. They have been, you know, like girls sometimes have friends for life, and they are a pair as friends, and both art students. And as teenagers, they had this fascination about the Aboriginals. And they've read about a place which is called the Sickness Healing Place. And the friend thinks that to get her over this tragic experience, the best thing might be that they go to Australia. And so those two Brazilian girls trek throughout all of Australia.
And then later, Zontag, the jaded Dutch literary critic, goes to Austria. And I don't know whether you're playing games with names of countries there, but many people have noted that Austria and Australia,
yeah,
very different kinds of countries, have very similar names.
I know, but not in Dutch. And the book was written in Dutch. So Australia is Australia, but Austria we call Oostenrijk.
Uh-huh.
So it's very different. But again, when the book was translated, it struck me too, and I thought, well, another present that you get from language. Thank you.
The book is divided into two sections, each preceded by an observation of a traveler, a woman on an airplane, a middle-aged man on a train platform. And I'm assuming that that this is something that you also have experienced, where you've looked at people either in those situations or sitting across from you in a train and wondered what their lives are like.
Yes, that's certainly. But in this particular case, I was sitting in a small, you know, the book was finished at that point. The book itself, let's say the center of the book.
You had written the first draft.
I had written the second part first.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wrote the first part second. And then I was still at it and had to go to Berlin from southern Germany, where I at that moment stayed, and took a small plane from a small airport in the south of Germany to Berlin. And at the last moment, a woman came into the plane, and she was attractive. I couldn't help noticing that. And she did not sit next to me, but she sat left in front of me, and I saw that she was going to unwrap a book. And I'm always curious. I always want to know what people read. And very often it has struck me, when women, when you see them on a beach or whether they sit in a bench of park, they hold books in such a way that you cannot see what book it is. And in this case, true, she unwraps the book rather sort of impatiently, and he tries to see it, but the light catches on the, you know, and he can't. And in the end, when she puts the book away, falls asleep, then she takes it up again. And in the end, almost at the moment the plane rides over, he sees the two words of the title, and the two words are paradise and lost. And he's writing this book, Lost Paradise. And so he thinks she's reading his book, which is impossible because he hasn't finished it. So he says, and at that moment she disappeared from the book, as did I. And so they both disappear, and then the book starts.
Well, your narrator interrupts from time to time to comment on the proceedings. So to some degree, this is also a meditation on the act of writing.
Yeah, I like little digressions. I don't like very predictable books. I've never really, I think, written one. So I also like to amuse myself while writing.
My guest is Cees Noteboom, CEESNOOTEBOOM. His latest novel, Lost Paradise, published by Grove Press. I don't know how many of your books have been translated into English, but you probably are the most published Dutch writer in English.
Yes. In English, there have been about, I would say, 9 books. A book on Spain called Roads to Santiago, about the pilgrimage to Santiago. Several other novels. And now recently, but it will come in America, recently in England and in Canada, a book called The Nomad Hotel. Nomad Hotel, mm-hmm. You know, about travels.
Well, since you are a travel writer, I'm not surprised that this book is very much about the transformative power of travel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you think that travel can have a healing effect?
Oh, for some people, absolutely. Others should probably stay home. I don't know. One hears that when families go on a foreign holiday, quite often all the tensions that have built up in a year come out. So I don't know about that. For me, travel is a normal way of life.
But also, I guess, the life of a writer. When Zontag first met Alma, he was in Australia for a literary festival, and I have the feeling that this gave you an opportunity to poke fun at those sorts of events. He quote, loathes most writers as people, and he thinks it would be better not to meet them at all, that they should lead a paper existence between the covers of a book.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, he also doesn't like his senior editor at the newspaper. He's a literary critic. And people, in my country at least, thought that they had discovered who the critic is that he had a go at. And so that particular newspaper was not very happy with the book. But those things happen.
Now, do you think this is because writers really do are happiest when they're living their solitary life in that room alone, whether they're writing it out longhand or typing it or putting it on a computer, and then suddenly they're forced to go out there and speak in public, give interviews, do a tour, attend conferences, tolerate the theories of others.
Give radio interviews.
Give radio interviews with idiotic Americans.
Well, that I didn't say. No. What happens is, indeed, it's a strange profession. You know, you run into it, and there you are, mostly, all the time, alone. And then suddenly you're sort of catapulted into a world where all these others who have the same solitary profession are together, and that's weird.
And they also have similar ambitions. Mr. Zontag thinks that several important Dutch writers, including Notteboom, have been writing for too long and that they take the idea of immortality much too seriously.
Well, yes, that is something I aimed at myself there. Because what I've noticed is, let's say here I'm a rather unknown quantity, but in my own country, of course, they know me. And I'm now, let's say, 74. So a young critic will probably have had to learn me at school and had to do an exam on one of my books. And you're still there. And so Zontag in the book is case in point. So he says, well, why don't they die?
Mm-hmm. Well, if you want to make a reputation for yourself, the first thing you do is you go after the famous writer.
Yeah, okay, I've noticed that, of course.
Now, you've often been compared to Calvino and Nabokov. Do you see them as influences on your writing?
Yes.
And Borges, I assume?
Yes, though Borges intellectually, I would say, was very superior. These are writers that I like and that I've learned a lot from. I don't think that if you put the texts near the other text that there's any in that sense similarity, but people have noticed a certain kind of writing and style, and which I can only be flattered by.
Well, in the case of American readers, we only read Calvino and you and Borges in translation. Nabokov, we have the opportunity to read the English from him. But you speak English very well. Do you work with your translators?
Yes, I do. I work with the translators in the languages that I know, like Spanish, French, German, and English. First of all, to avoid mistakes, because there are translators. I must say I'm extremely lucky with my translators, but they're fallible people. And
sometimes there are misunderstandings.
Oh, fantastic misunderstandings.
I mean, I know every book is an experience between the reader and the book, and no two people read the same book.
Well, I'll tell you, my German translator at some point, and she must have had a complete blank, is that how you say it?
Mm-hmm. Or a blackout or whatever.
A blackout, yes. I wrote about some birds on top of a church steeple in northern Germany. Storks, and she wrote ostriches. And I said, well, it can't be. They can't even fly. And she hated herself and said, oh, how can I be so stupid? But it happens. And if I hadn't read the translation, that mistake might have stayed in the book.
And people always thought, well, there he is doing one of those postmodern things, putting ostriches on tops of
seals. Yeah.
Well, in this case, the translator is Susan Masati. And
she's American, by the way. She lives in Holland, in a remote sort of, even Holland has a remote province in the north. She's very good, I think. And but we went through a lot of things together. I mean, she sends her, and then we talk about if I feel that it's not completely right, or sometimes you have to explain a turn of phrase and things like that. But all in all, I find it's very readable.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Says Notre-Dame, his latest book is a novel. It's called Lost Paradise, and it's published by Grove Press.